This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Known and Never podcast. I'm your host, Natalie Bromley, and this week we are looking at Mission to Burnley, the Sky four-part documentary, which is currently taking the world of football by storm. Okay, maybe it's not, but it's definitely an interesting look, one for Burnley fans to reminisce over a very, very strange 12-month period. The camera started rolling when Sean Dyche was relieved of his duties at the back end of the last Premier League season, and it follows through that summer through ALK's mission to rebuild Burnley and to get us back in the Premier League. Vincent Kompany coming in, a whole new wave of generation of players coming in. We binge-watched the show, and we're going to give you our reaction to it. So let's go. And in order to go through this episode, I am joined this week by regular panellist George Poole. George, welcome, welcome.
Good evening. I'm just about getting my sleeping pattern back to usual after the night spent watching Mission to Burnley. So
things you do for this podcast, you are. And of course, my favourite, obviously, Rich Steele. Rich, welcome.
Hiya, Natalie. Hello, listeners. Tuning in from a not-so-sunny cavern in Ireland this
Indeed.
Evening.
We are international this week, much as our board now are. So let's kick straight off. George, let's kick us off with your... obviously you stayed up all night late into the night to binge watch this for us, try to avoid the spoilers in the group chat while we all caught up. When you finished watching it, what was your overwhelming feeling? What was your immediate reaction?
I was incredibly tired. It was 7:30 in the morning, so I've been awake all night. But other than that, it was more just enjoyment, I suppose. It's more than anything, more than all the details we'll go into in this podcast, is the bizarre nature of the fact that Burnley were featured in something like this. To see Burnley on my Sky account with cameras, not just on the pitch, but also in the dressing room and in the boardroom, it was just bizarre more than anything. It felt like I was on the Truman Show or something. So. I really came away with a sense of enjoyment, but that doesn't mean there isn't points where, I don't particularly agree with some bits of it or don't appreciate some of it. So I think it'll be an interesting one to discuss with both of you tonight.
Definitely. Rich, from a fan perspective, if we just concentrate on Burnley fans watching the docuseries, it served, I think, as both a fantastic... diary to look back on that championship season, which we all absolutely loved, and it was great watching those games and reliving those results and reliving those moments of glory, but also a very intimate look behind the scenes, which we as fans haven't necessarily been party to before. We'll get into the nitty-gritty of whether that could have been more or less, but did you have that same sense of reflection but also education?
Yeah, it was really interesting. We all want to know so much about our football club. We love our football club so much and we invest so much time emotionally, financially as well. But yet we have hardly any control over it or hardly really any knowledge of actually what goes on. We want new signings, we want this, that and the other. And I think it does give you a real indication of how challenging it is to run a football club. That's the indication I really got from it, was while the challenges that are involved on the financial side, the commercial side, the playing side, the stress, that was on Alan Pace. My God, I've never seen anybody as stressed as in my own life. And, you know, I think there's elements of Alan Pace which I do still slightly worry me, which I know we'll go into. But overall, he definitely won me over. I thought he came across as somebody who cares a lot, genuinely wants Burnley to do well. I think, let's not kid ourselves, ALK are in it to make money, of course, like a lot of people are in business. But I really do think there's a long-term vision that they want to do to make Burnley a better football club and to leave it in a better place than where they picked it up. And I think we're starting to see, to see that at the moment. And yeah, I think like what George was saying, it's just really cool to see Burnley on a Sky documentary. And there was, for me personally, I found it quite emotional and reflective. Mm. And there was a lot of pride in me watching that documentary. And obviously seeing Burnley, looked at and analysed so well. And yeah.
Okay, well, let's start there. Because I think it became very clear very quickly that this docuseries was going to very much focus on Alan Pace as a chairman and his team at ALK, what drives them, what motivates them, and what their plans are for the club going forward. And there's been some criticism among some fans, particularly those who haven't necessarily warmed to our board yet, that it was a PR piece and it was all about making Alan Pace look good. And I'm not entirely sure that criticism's warranted. But from your perspective, George, each episode focused on, from an editorial perspective, each episode started by focus on an element of Alan Pace and his personal life. It was fed in with moments in news articles as what was happening in the country at any one time. And I think as a fan, did you want to see more of the playing side and the manager side, or did you want to see the side of the board that was portrayed in the editorial cut?
Well, this really cuts down to the meat and bones of the series, I suppose, in that the ambition of the Mission to Burnley documentary wasn't to provide a behind-the-scenes perspective of Burnley Football Club going after promotion in the Championship. It was very much a behind-the-scenes look at the ownership, at the management and how the management interacts with the owners on that more grand sort of macro level. And I think you saw that in the first two episodes in particular, where it was teeing up who Alan Pace was, who ALK yeah. Capital were, how they interacted with company. And so for me, the series in some ways didn't get going until episode three. And I think episode three is a real high point, but I'd come back to that point later in this show. More generally answering your question, yeah, as a fan, I would have loved an all or nothing style show on Burnley, where you get to know the players, you get to really know company inside out, his family. You get to know what happens in the changing room, not just at one game against West Brom, but you get to see how that changing room dynamic evolves over the course of a season. Now, that's absolutely not what we got here, because that wasn't the intention of the documentary. And I believe there is a lot of justification for that. You know, they didn't want this series to be another all or nothing. They didn't want it to be like Sunderland Till I Die. It is completely something different. And for that reason, I think it's incredibly successful in what it sets out to do. Now, as a fan, personally, I'd have preferred an all or nothing. But that doesn't mean I don't appreciate what they managed to achieve here, because I do really think it's a solid four episodes of a TV show. And whether you're a Burnley fan or just a general football fan, I think there's moments to enjoy throughout.
Yeah, I guess from your perspective, Rich, you've always been, I think, in the middle with this. You've been very wary of ALK and the chairman, and very aware that it's a completely different ownership structure and set of characters than we're maybe used to as a club, but also giving them the benefit of the doubt and giving them an opportunity to show what they can do. Did this change your mind at all, particularly when you're looking at how they ran with the finances and, you know, bringing, for example, when the JJ Watt investment came in and we saw a lot of behind the scenes of that? Did that give you any sense of comfort as a fan who was maybe slightly more cautious about their intentions or not?
Yeah, I'll go back to what your question was in a minute and kind of go to what George was saying about the all or nothing. I really enjoy the All or Nothing documentaries. Obviously, the one about Tottenham, I thought was probably the best one. But would I want to be a Tottenham fan watching that? No, I wouldn't.
No.
Because I think, and I think the way Netflix is, and I think the way it was edited, I think it made portrayed situations to be worse than they are. They made it to be more like a reality TV show rather than an actual football show. So if we had an All or Nothing Burnley, could they have edited it and could they have manipulated it so that it would have made it look like a reality programme? So I definitely would have liked to maybe seen a little bit more about like the journey some of these young players had, say like a Zaruri signing from Belgium, you know, how he settled into the local area, the community, and, you know, got that Morocco call up. That, you know, that would have been amazing, and about Cymru's family and whatnot. But like George said, that wasn't the purpose of it. Going back to your question now, Natalie, I with Alan Pace, I was always sceptical about why they took over. And there was a little line where one of his business partners said, you know, well, you said we was going to make loads of money in this.
I knew you'd pick and up listen, on that.
And let's not, you know, let's not beat around the bush. ALK are not saying only in this, but a big reason that in this is to make money. And that is absolutely fine. That is absolutely fine. But one thing that you can clearly see is that Alan Pace cares, and I think his team genuinely care.
Yes.
I think, you know, there was that great scene at the end when he was cleaning tables for that really pleasant lady. You know, and I think that shows the type of guy he is. He cares. How emotional he is does worry me. I think there's an element of when you're in a job that he does, where you need to be calm, you need to be rational, and he's a million mile an hour, and he gets up here and he seems like a very excitable character. So let's say in the last week of the transfer window, will he make a rash decision? I don't know if anybody else picked up on it, but there was a moment where he was in the car driving and he was speaking to the finance directors like, wow, we've gone over budget, haven't we? And you know what? Nobody's mentioned it now. We've gone up. So that's still slightly, I don't want to be negative. That, you know, that does slightly concern me. But, and we're going to come on to him in a minute, I think that's where Vincent Kompany is a special person, because as soon as he walked into them board meetings, it was like a load of people who was panicking and everything, and Kompany just sits down calmly, he rationalises, you know, say for example, Lyle Foster, he rationalises why he signed Lyle Foster, and then the whole room calms down, he exits the building, and then the whole meeting's calm. So that's one thing I do really like. But overall, I do like Alan Pace. I like ALK, I think, as a group of friends, which they are. They've got a really nice dynamic, a really nice mix. But hopefully, as he gets a little bit more experienced, he does calm down a little bit and he doesn't work at a million mile an hour, because we've all probably done it in our working career. When you're at a million mile an hour, you don't make the best decisions.
But do you not think, though, and George, I'll come back to you in a minute, because I know you've got a couple of points you wanted to add on to that as well, though. I think that's the benefit in business of having your team around you. And George and I have had the benefit of working with these people quite closely as well with the fan advisory board. And you can sense that dynamic, and you can sense where the spikes of enthusiasm are, and who the dreamers are in the team, and who want to reach for the stars, and those who are the level-headed ones. And I think as a group of businessmen, the balance between them is perfectly well. I don't necessarily... I would feel confident as a fan to let Alan Pace go off and dream what he wants to do and be as daft as he wants and dream as big as he wants, because there will be people in the club who he's put in place for that reason to just be a check and balance, to say, you know what, great idea, but that's risky, so let's bring that back down. Sorry, George, you had a couple of things you wanted to add on to that.
Well, I was just going to sort of back up Richard's point, actually, and one of the things that stood out from the whole series was that scene in the car where Pace phones up, I think it's Michael Hunt, who he phones up in the car and says, wow, we're only going to spend 15 or 20 million and we've spent 27. Sort of, how's that happened? And, you know, that scene does give you a sense of, hang on, it's meant to be you.
Who's got a handle on this?
How's this gone out of control? So I think there is elements like that in it, which I think is justified to think, oh, And especially in the context of this summer, you know, our spending is nearing 100 million. Obviously, you've got to preface that with the fact that these transfer fees are paid over the length of a contract. It's not just gone out the bank this summer, but it's important to note. Now, one of the big things I was going to raise to Richard's point was, I thought it was interesting listening to Russell Ball on the Turfcast podcast when he was on there this week or last, just a few days ago. And one of the big things he said, which popped out to me, it sort of went under the radar, was the fact that Alan Pearce had enormous editorial leverage over this show. He said this didn't get the sign-off until Alan had his fingerprints on it. He was in a lot of control in terms of the editorial processes of it, how it came about, how it came across. So I do think there's merit to supporters who are saying it's just a fluff piece for 3LK, for the owners of Burnley. And I do think there's justifications for that. And I say that as someone that, you know me, you know, we've got links to the club with the Claridge Trust myself and with the fan advisory board. I'm not someone who's necessarily very much anti-ALK. I really do think they're doing the best for the club and I have a lot of trust in them. But I do think it's important to note that they did have control over what came about. And so I think there is justifications to fans who might see it as, well, I don't know, it's just a fluff piece for them. So, you know, I do think it's important that we recognise that and say it's not just it does have an angle to it.
It does, but also I think that if you are a brand and you are going into a worldwide, almost a franchise of a worldwide brand that's got lenses on every single angle of it, I think it's appropriate to do that as well. I wouldn't necessarily have been happy with the warts and all. I mean, as a set of fans, just this past couple of weeks, we've faced scrutiny yet again for some of the more unsavoury sides of the town and some of the attitudes and tolerance levels, which are not yet where they need to be. Now, that's not to say that we should shy away from those things and we shouldn't be glossing over where we are as a club, but I don't necessarily have too much of a problem with them having those rights. I don't think it necessarily means that what we've seen is fake. I think it's just, I think a lot of that can be down to just portraying the message that the board wants to deliver. I think the only other thing that I would add on to yours, Rich, and I think when we talked about, you know, those, there was a couple of things for me with the over-enthusiasm of the board, and it wasn't just the bit on the phone about, oh, we've gone over budget. That coupled with the scene when they all looked like they looked in a stationary cupboard where they all secretly, in a four of them, going, we're on the transfer embargo. Like, how did this happen? So there's just a couple of things where they've potentially taken their eye off the ball a little bit. But inexperience of running a club, inexperience of football management, these are things that I don't expect to happen again. And I think it would be, I'd be very surprised if we didn't have things in our history as Burnley Football Club where other mistakes have been made and things, you know, you learn from your lessons. So the critical thing for me is to make sure those things don't happen again.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Rich, moving on then, one of the things that George has already touched on is that we did get to see the dynamic between Alan Pearce and Vincent Kompany. It was very clear very early on that Kompany was absolutely Alan Pearce's first choice and he wasn't necessarily entertaining any other ideas. We did get the bleeper button for the other two candidates who were on the shortlist. I think we can probably safely say that one of them was probably Chris Wilder, given that I think Alan Pearce said it was, I think he said something like it's too much like Sean. I can't think of any other managers on that list who would be in that category. So I think that's probably one. But we didn't know who the others were. And I think, George, you said that you would have liked to have known, but it doesn't really matter. But seeing that relationship between the two of them and seeing companies' influence on the board, how lucky do you think we've been as a club to have two managers? Daesh was like this before company, and company coming in now, who are experts technically on the field, but do understand the business side of running a club and are able to competently hold their own in a boardroom.
I think you look back at Burnley's history, we've had a relatively low turnover of managers, especially in the last two decades compared to a lot of other clubs. And I think if you hire the right manager, undoubtedly, you know, you're going to have more success on the pitch. I think even you look back at the Eddie Howe times, I know it maybe didn't quite work out at Burnley, but I still think overall he signed some players that set us up, you know, for the Daesh era. I'm going to go to Daesh first. It really seemed like when Daesh got sacked and when we got relegated, that was the proper start of the Page reign. I think, yes. I don't know who that gentleman was, but there was a gentleman who was very kind of like positive and said, well, you know, now we've got relegated, Daesh is gone, you can really put your stamp on things now. And I think that's been a real positive. And I mentioned to you before about how calm company is. Vincent Company is an absolute special human being. He really is. He's somebody who can talk up to the board, he can talk down to the players as effectively. I think what you've seen from Company is this incredibly driven man with an unbelievable knowledge of football, and I think he wants to learn.
Yeah.
But he's still got them man management skills, them personable and them people skills, which is so important. I think in any, you know, in any walk of life, if you're not able to engage with people, it doesn't matter how much knowledge you've got. That knowledge is then useless. So Company is an outstanding person. And I think we'll look back at this time when you know, eventually when Company does leave us, and we'll go, wow, how lucky are we, you know, to have Company as manager. And what I like about him is he's not just going to the board saying, give me this money, give me that money, I need this player. He's very understanding of the situation with Burnley. He wants us to build long-term success as well as what Alan Pace does. And I think, like I said, he understands the business model perfectly. And I think also Pace has the trust in him. You know, and that's what you've got to say, fair play to Alan Pace. I've got a lot of respect. You know, when Company and his teams come into him with players like Zaruri, Benson, Vitinho, who, you know, Bayer, Aldekeel, Foster, I think is an important one that we'll mention. You know, still Alan Pace is still the one who has to sign off on those checks, and he's given Company full trust in that.
Yeah.
And you can see they have a really good relationship and a really good professional and working relationship. And like I said, I can't imagine there's that many managers and chairmen, you know, who have such a good understanding with each other.
Yeah, and I think that was probably epitomised most, George, by the amazing snippet that we saw of Vincent Company telling the board what the transfer strategy needed to be and saying to them that every single year, every single summer, we need to be in a position where we have got two or three assets that we have available to sell to recover that money, and the players that come are just ready to step up and step into their shoes. And it's this idea that our players become our strongest asset, which we knew anyway, but that we're not just holding on to them, which is what our previous administration perhaps did. And certainly with the likes of James Tarkowski and Nick Pope, we didn't get anywhere near the money we could have done for those. The idea that actually you sell your players in their peak, but the next ones will be along and you'll fall in love with them. And that's uncomfortable as a fan because you want to see your players play for as long as you can. But it's so crucial when you take those heartstrings away from that discussion and realise that that's going to keep us up there for a very long time.
Yeah, it ain't rocket science, is it? But I suppose in this context of American owners coming into football, European football for the first time, it is important. And in terms of the financial fair play, we're spending, let's just call it, Aaron Ramsey's going to join the club. We're spending 100 million this summer, as we preface that with the fact it's going to be spent over a numerous amount of years. But we're spending 100 million. We need to bring in the profit over the next season or two.
Yeah.
to balance the books somewhat for financial fair play. So we're not accumulating the losses. That'll see us get into a situation where Everton have been in the last couple of years and where Wolves are now, where they can't sign anybody. And they're both in Dickie's Meadow this season because of it. So, you know, it's really important that we don't fall foul of that. And you see through Vincent Kompany, he's got his head screwed on. And it was really impressive, like you mentioned, in that first meeting he had with what I presume was the board of directors and a few key investors, where he met them over Zoom from Gawthorpe. And he said, look, this is how we need to work. We need to be selling these assets. And you can already see it at play, because whilst admittedly we've not sold anybody for any real money this summer, we can see it in the way they've been recruiting, the players that they're signing. These new deals for Benson and Zorori, I'm under no illusions that they're going to be here for 4 or 5 years. Whether it's next summer or the summer after, they're going to be sold for a very handsome profit. But you've got the likes of Luca Colaiuccio now, who we've signed, you know, on the cheap, who might be the ones to come in and replace them. So you can see that transfer strategy at play. And whilst it's absolutely awful as a fan, because I don't want to be the one to admit Zorori's going to be sold next summer, but it's just a fact of life in football and in the Premier League. And I mean, just look at Brighton, eh? Imagine if we could achieve just an inch of what Brighton have over the last couple of seasons. And you wouldn't have caught me saying that 5 years ago.
No. Brighton have come out of nowhere and have become a blueprint for how to survive. No, actually, not how to survive, how to thrive in the Premier League when you are not one of the powerful seven sides in 2023. And it's come out of nowhere and everybody's suddenly stepping up. And I think that's one of the things that does fill me with optimism about Burnley, and that when you see this documentary, you realise that they're already putting plans in place for the next 2 or 3 years. They're already thinking ahead, and Burnley has the potential to be the next Brighton, and that suddenly this model comes out of nowhere and this success comes that we've already been doing for 5 years, and everybody else is suddenly backing that as well. Rich, from your perspective, and I think this is a common, I'm not going to say complaint, but a common wish for a lot of the Burnley fans watching the docuseries, was that we wish we'd have seen more player development and more training and more of those personalities coming through. The little bits we did see in the dressing room were really, really great on the playing side rather than the business side.
Yeah, listen, it would have been nice, but I think George mentioned before the actual kind of point of the programme was to look at ALK and the business side of Burnley more and how the manager interacted. Wouldn't it have been great if they focused on kind of like a senior player like Barnes, who's been at the club, maybe like a Zerouri who'd come in, and imagine if they followed Zerouri from like him signing to going to the World Cup, you know, to then finishing the season as he did. But unfortunately the documentary wasn't that way. You look at Sky did a sim, obviously done the documentaries with Salford, and you look at Salford, it's more about the ownership and how the ownership interacts with the manager and how they run the football club. So I just kind of took it as it was, really, and didn't try and think about what wasn't there. I just tried to enjoy what was there, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I do get that. I would have liked to have seen
more about Kompany at home and with his family, and then maybe about like Craig Bellamy and whatnot. But at the same time, there's a part of me that I didn't want an All or Nothing or a Sunderland documentary that would have turned into a reality TV show. No. I didn't want that personally.
But it is possible to have that though. The trend that set off the American love affair with British football, welcome to Wrexham. I thought that was a very good balance. We got to understand and get to know these Hollywood owners and really get to know those as individuals. But I know more about Wrexham players than I ever should have done. And I saw them in their family homes, particularly in the early episodes with this season that they didn't get promoted and those players have got moved on. But I now look at a team sheet or watch Wrexham on the TV and I know who their players are. So I think that was a nice balance. Sorry, George, you had your hand up then. You wanted to say something.
Yeah, I mean, I for one, I've never seen and never want to see the Welcome to Wrexham documentaries. I've got no interest in that.
Oh, it's good. No, it's good. You should. It's good. No,
it's not for me. But I do think there is merit to what you were saying, Natalie, in that there can be a balance. And the reason I know there could be a balance with this series was that they teased it in points. Now, I came away from episode one saying to myself, because I'd written notes after each episode.
I have Jack them here.
Jack Cole, Brownhill and Ashley Barnes will be fascinating characters throughout, because I thought their characters would develop. They were interjected in episode one and you thought, well, that's going to tee them up for something. And then at the end of episode two, you had Nathan Teller and Josh Brownhill coming from the two different sides of getting ready for the East Lancashire Derby. You had Nathan Teller, who had no idea what it was. And you had Brownhill, a local lad who knew exactly what it meant. And you had that different dynamic between them, but it was very quickly brushed over. And as Rich said, the Barnes story was completely brushed over. So there was moments where it shone through. I thought in episode one, Michael Jackson and Paul Jenkins in particular were absolutely fantastic in revealing what relegation would mean to Burnley. They showed they knew, which we all knew anyway, having listened to Michael Jackson when he was manager last season. So there was moments where it felt like it was breaking light on that kind of series. It just, you knew it was never going to get there. So look, whether that's something that develops in series two, if it comes about, I'd be interested in that sort of development of the show.
That brings me very nicely to our final question of this podcast, George. It's almost like we prepare for these things. Rich, is there scope for a season two? And if so, what does that look like to you?
Yeah, 100%. I think with Burnley being in the Premier League this season, I think people are genuinely interested in Burnley now, whether they want us to succeed or want us to fail. I still think we're not the most popular club. And I think that's another aspect of wanting to do this documentary. I remember Alan Pates, when he first took over, said, oh, I want Burnley to be everyone's second team, which I still think we've got quite a long way to go. And kind of look at Brighton now. They are maybe not George's, but they're probably a lot of other people's second team in the Premier League, and just because they love the way they play. I definitely think there's scope for season two. I'm sure the producer who done the mission to Burnley will be listening out to the feedback of the podcasts that we've done and other podcasts and whatnot, and probably thinking, right, okay, we can get a bit more snippets of the players. And I think once you're in the Premier League, I think another part of it as well is we want to see our players, but the paying public who maybe don't have a clue who some of these players are they actually going to be interested that much? Like you said, like the Wrexham players, and you wanted to get to know them, and that's great. But maybe when we are in the Premier League more, and like I said, football players, they are like soap stars. You know, they're just these people who we see on our telly once or twice a week, and people are really interested to get to know them more. And oh my God, Ashley Barnes, oh, he shops at Asda. Oh, I thought he'd shop at Tesco, kind of thing. Like, they're kind of like your old school teachers when you don't imagine them to have normal lives, isn't it, really?
Yeah,
so, yeah, I definitely think there's scope for a new one. But if there is a new one, I hope we don't get relegated again. So
I'm definitely not. George, final thoughts from you then before we wrap up?
I'll just end on my biggest positive, and it answers your question somewhat, Natalie, in that I do think there is a scope for a series two, because to me, the first two episodes of this series were, I'm not going to say wasted, but used entirely to tee up the story of who Burnley are, who Company is, who AOK are. The first two episodes for me were entertaining as a Burnley fan, but it's episode three, which I think is by far and away the highlight of this series, and goes to show where it can flourish in a second series, because you really got down to the nitty gritty. You had Company revealing that it takes 120 training sessions and 100 meetings for his teams to really gel within a season. So about January, February time, which is important to note for this season. Then you also had Company in the tactical meetings, testing the players, where he was asking like Samuel Bastin like about West Brom's tactics to make sure he was still listening, engaged. So you're having all this behind the scenes, and it really led up to the West Brom game. You had Company's team talk before the game with loads of F-bombs. You had Barnes talking to the team as well. You had Twine's winner. And then after the game, you had celebrations in the dressing room. So look, for me, episode three was the unbelievable high point of this series. And I do think it's a stellar bit of television. And for me, that's where it can move forward in a second series.
And that is all we have time for. We have reviewed Mission to Burnley and our first thoughts of that. Let us know what you think, listeners. Did you watch only one go? Did you enjoy it? Did you think it could be improved? Do you have any concerns? You know how to get in touch with us. You can drop us a line on Twitter. Now, X or whatever it is that the cool kids are saying. You can leave a comment on our Facebook page or you can email us at podcast@knownandever.net. We will be back before the weekend with our preview show as normal, looking ahead to that game against Villa. And we'll be in touch the week after with our reaction to that very game. In the meantime, we hope you enjoyed Mission to Burnley and this podcast as much as we did making it. I've been Natalie Bromley. Until next time. The Known and Ever podcast is brought to you in association with the TalkSport Fan Network. Our host and editor is Natalie Bromley, and the show is produced by Matt Moss. Our resident statistician is Dave Roberts, and our FPL expert is Adam Dennett. The analysis show team is collectively Tom Whittaker, Rich Steele, George Poole, Charlotte Rigby, and Adam Dennett. Our music is provided by George Gaskell, and our newsletter team is headed up by Jamie Smith. If you don't already, you can subscribe to our newsletter by visiting knownandever.substack.com. Thanks as ever go to our partners TalkSport. We are proud to be associated with the TalkSport Fan Network.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.